Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yockey in Washington. Ahead, President Obama calls for more European assistance in fighting ISIS. Researchers help elephants buzz off Kenyan farms. A look at the U.S. government's role in WhatsApp encryptioning. And the 15th annual Tribeca Film Festival concludes with several stars part of the events.
This is concentrated fun. We shot it in 3 days. Yeah, everybody jumped in.
It's right here on The Voice of America. The United States is preparing to deploy another 250 military personnel to Syria, upping the U.S. ground presence there to about 300. U.S. President Barack Obama made the announcement today in Germany.
Just as I've approved additional support for Iraqi forces against ISIL, I've decided to increase U.S. support for local forces fighting ISIL in Syria. A small number of American special operations forces are already on the ground in Syria, and their expertise has been critical as local forces have driven ISIL out of key areas. So given the success, I've approved the deployment of up to 250 additional U.S. personnel in Syria, including special forces, to keep up this momentum. They're not going to be leading the fight on the ground, but they will be essential in providing the training and assisting local forces as they continue to drive ISIL back. So make no mistake, these terrorists will learn the same lesson as others before them have, which is your hatred is no match for our nations united in the defense of our way of life. And just as we remain relentless on the military front, we're not going to give up on diplomacy to end the civil war in Syria, because the suffering of the Syrian people has to end, and that requires an effective political transition.
Our correspondent, Mary Alice Salinas, is traveling with the president, and she's spoken with us several times during this trip, and she's on the line right now from Germany. Welcome, Mary Alice.
Well, you're welcome, Susan. The president today announced those extra 250 special operations forces going to Syria. That's in addition to the 50 that are already there. So that brings the total number to 300. Now, the reason why he says this is important is because the 50 that were there, the president says what they were doing was working. And so they ramped up the effort, hoping to make even more progress in the fight against Islamic State. Basically, the president says they're going there to train and assist and advise local fighters, and that they've done that very successfully. So they're hopeful that with more help, they will take back more territory from Islamic State.
And he's interested in the European nations also joining forces there.
Well, that was a thing. This address really was to the people of Europe. It was targeted to them, but the president also uses as a time to say these terrorists are doing everything they can to attack our cities and to kill our people, and we have got to do everything we can to stop them. So Europe, so NATO, let's do more. I think there's more that we all can do. So yes, he uses this address to ask Europe and NATO to ramp up their efforts to do more to help in Iraq, to do more in Syria, to do more with assistance, to do more with help with training more of the local fighters who are taking this combat role to Islamic State.
After his remarks, Obama met with his counterparts from Germany, Britain, France, Italy. What do we know about those talks?
Well, a big focus will be, again, Islamic State. It's going to be sort of laying out the agenda for the NATO summit that's going to take place in July in Warsaw. So they're pulling together how they're going to approach all of this. And again, it's getting everyone to contribute more. And it's not just Islamic State. The message here is we all have to work together, because a lot of these issues, they're not anything any one nation can take care of. Not Islamic State, not the migration crisis that's happening in Southern Europe, not the issues that come forward because of Russian aggression in Eastern Ukraine. All these things we have to work together on. So they're laying out the agenda, sort of getting their ducks in a row for that event in July. So that summit's taking place. And then after that, it's been a very, very full agenda for the president on this overseas trip. He will head back to Washington.
Well, I was going to ask you, as everything's wrapping up and you look back on it all, what do you think were some of the high points, or do you think the president was successful?
He certainly did pull a lot of people together. These are the leaders of major European nations. They've come together in one place. But he also went to London as part of his visit to speak more with Cameron about this, Prime Minister Cameron. He was in Saudi Arabia to talk with the leaders of the Arab nations to talk about countering ISIL and other efforts. So I would say it appears to have been very successful as they pushed the talks forward on a number of key challenges. And this isn't his final year in office in the last few months. And one thing he noted yesterday is, you know, people told me in the second term things would slow down. Well, you know, that hasn't happened yet. Very busy time for this president.
Well, thank you very much, Mary Alice, for speaking with us today and in the last couple of days. And you have a safe trip home.
Thank you very much, Susan.
I've been joined here in the studio with the social media reporter Andrew Palchewski. And there's a story going on today in the race for the White House. It looks like two of the guys are ganging up on the other guy in the Republican Party, and Andrew's going to tell us all about it. It's
yes.
A little dirty play here.
That's what some people are saying on social media. It's Senator Ted Cruz and Governor John Kasich, the two Republicans who are running for the nomination that are not Donald Trump, are teaming up to try to rob Donald Trump of the nomination, saying we want to keep him from getting the nomination. Trump is calling it on social media an act of desperation. Trump supporters are saying it's a last-ditch effort or too little too late, that their candidate already has this wrapped up. Kasich and Cruz supporters, however, are saying it's the only way they can save their party and save the GOP. Now, what's interesting is they asked John Kasich, said, oh, does that mean that you want your supporters to vote for Ted Cruz in Indiana and his supporters to support you in the other states? He said, no, we never said that. It's just we agreed not to campaign. So people are questioning how much of an alliance this really is.
It's kind of a soap opera. It never gets dull.
And that's what people, not just in the U.S., but around the world are looking at. This really is political theater playing out in front of our very eyes. So that's why this is a topic that's trending not just in the U.S., but around the world.
And you have another topic that's trending big time over the weekend. And
absolutely.
I haven't seen it yet.
You haven't seen it yet?
No.
Well, I wonder if our listeners have.
Listeners, but, what we're talking about.
Hashtag Lemonade, Beyonce's sixth album that she released with this kind of movie/long-form music video that played on the HBO network here in the U.S. Only for 24 hours you could watch it on HBO. And the album's been released now. It's up on iTunes. It's all over the place. However, streaming, it's not on Apple Music. It's not on Spotify. It is on Tidal, the music service, which coincidentally is partially owned by Beyonce's husband, the rapper R&B star Jay-Z. So that's why you can only get it on Tidal and only stream it there. But people are already buying up the album. It looks like it's going to be a big hit.
Okay, well, it's already a big hit online.
Absolutely. Hashtag Lemonade was tweeted by millions over the weekend.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Andrew.
Thank you.
This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Treating someone infected with viruses such as HIV, Ebola, influenza, and Zika has always been a challenge. Viruses are known to quickly mutate and develop a resistance to drugs designed to eliminate them. Scientists looking to create antiviral medications usually go after these nasty bugs one at a time. But some are expanding their focus to develop drugs that will fight more than one type of virus at once. Unfortunately, some of the new methods used to fight multiple viruses may also be poisonous to healthy cells. A team of Asian and American scientists say they've come up with a plan that fights a wide range of viruses, even those that mutate to develop resistance. This new approach uses a polymer called polyethylenamine that is specially treated to make it non-toxic. This polymer electrostatically interacts with both viral and human cells to prevent infection. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Elephant crop raiding continues to be a major source of conflict between people and wildlife in Kenya. One researcher is hoping to alleviate the problem by using elephants' natural aversion to bees to deter them from farms. VOA's Jill Craig visited the project before this month's Giants Club Summit, which brings together dignitaries together at Mount Kenya to find solutions to combat poaching, the number one threat to elephants.
African elephants are the largest land animals on Earth, weighing as much as 6 tons and measuring up to 7.5 meters long. Despite their size, elephants still find humans to be their greatest threat. Tens of thousands of elephants are killed every year for their ivory tusks. The head of the Human-Elephant Coexistence Program at conservation group Save the Elephants, Dr. Lucy King, says poaching is devastating animal populations across Africa. But another major concern is human-wildlife conflict. When elephants eat crops, it causes financial loss to the farmers and potential harm to the elephants.
The population in Africa is increasing exponentially, and the land space for elephants and other large game is shrinking exponentially. Corridors are being blocked, infrastructure development is coming up, and so I believe the next big challenge for elephants is going to be conflict. And that interface between actual farmers and elephants is the one that we're working on, and we feel we can do something with.
King learned that when elephants hear this sound, they round up their herd and move away quickly. So the Elephants and Bees Project was born. King and her team work near Kenya's Tsavo East National Park, where they help 22 farmers build and maintain beehive fences, which consist of between 10 and 21 hives, depending on the size of the farmer's plot. The hives are strung along the periphery of the farmer's crops to deter the elephants from crop raiding. The team monitors each farmer's hives carefully, taking notes on each one and also working with the farmers to determine the elephants' movements in the area. Local farmer Charity Mwangome, who built her fence in 2012, believes all the buzz. She says it helps a lot because if the elephants come in and they see the fence, they stop and do not come into the farm. They instead go around. But the beehive fence, which King says has about an 80% success rate, does not just help keep out the elephants. It also provides farmers with another means of income, through honey production. And for farmers who are on average making $300 per year, less than a dollar a day, the 30 to 50% income boost makes a big difference. Elephants and Bees Project Research Center Coordinator Matthew Rudolph says the biggest problem is just keeping up with consumer demand for the honey, which he and other staff members process.
People pick it up as soon as it is jarred.
Which promises a sweeter future for farmer and elephant alike. Jill Craig, VOA News, Voi, Kenya.
Coming up on International Edition, what's this WhatsApp news all about? And a peek at the Tribeca Film Festival.
The recent announcement by mobile messaging service WhatsApp that it would begin offering end-to-end encryption made worldwide headlines. That's no surprise, given the app has approximately 1 billion users across the globe. What was surprising and mostly unnoticed was the role the U.S. government ultimately played in making that happen. International Edition's Doug Bernard covers the cyber world and joins us now here in the studio. Hi, Doug.
Hi, Susan.
Hey, what's all this WhatsApp news about?
You mean what's up with WhatsApp?
Right.
Very recently, WhatsApp announced that it is incorporating its offering end-to-end encryption in its text message service. It's used by over a billion people, and so that means now potentially over a billion people will have really solid end-to-end encryption. Now, they did it by incorporating a little program that's called Signal. What really wasn't reported is that Signal, this little tiny company, actually was supported by something called the Open Technology Fund. This is a fund that's administered by Radio Free Asia, a sister broadcaster to Voice of America, using all government funding, and basically they're there to support the development and spread of tools like encryption, circumvention, and anonymizing software.
So what is the Open Technology Fund, and how does it work?
So OTF receives approximately, funds vary, but approximately $8 million a year. These are funds that they use to distribute to promising upcoming new startup companies that are developing these privacy protection encryption type programs. What they're really trying to do is help protect people, vulnerable people in autocratic countries. And of course, there's millions and millions of people living under such circumstances, trying to get along on their phone or online. So OTF is basically encouraging the development of these encryption and other protection programs to help these vulnerable people.
Well, in a feature you recently wrote, which was on the VOA website, and mm-hmm. they can go look at it if they want to, you said that it might surprise some that the OTF is supporting encryption.
Right.
Why is that surprising?
So here you have essentially a government agency, the OTF, to the tune of about $8 million a year, actively encouraging development of encryption at the same time that you have another branch of the government, the Department of Justice, who is actively trying to limit and work with Silicon Valley to pull back and limit, basically, the spread of encryption. And a third part of government, this time the legislative or Congress branch, where members are now seriously looking at legislation that would mandate limits on encryption. So it looks like you have various, in fact, you do have various parts of the U.S. government, the same government, that are working, you know, legitimately cross-purposes.
So who's going to win there?
Well, maybe everybody in the short run, because this is, I think, an interesting object lesson in how U.S. democracy works. It is not all top-down. It is not everybody marching to the same tune. In very often, on any number of issues, this time encryption, there are all kinds of competing interests. And those interests are allowed to go on competing with each other for a certain period of time. Now, there may come a point where maybe the presidential level or discussions between the president and Congress, that kind of serious initiatives are looked at. But I think for the time being, basically what's happening is both of these two parts of the government are going to continue doing what they do, continue supporting it and backing it up. And just as an interesting side note, here you have a third part of the government, the Voice of America, reporting on the conflict between these other two.
I see that. Okay, well, thank you very much, Doug.
You bet.
This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
The 15th annual Tribeca Film Festival concluded Sunday with stars like Viola Davis, Danny DeVito, and Jane Fonda being a part of the events in New York. International Edition's Steve Norman has details.
Four-time Oscar nominee Ethan Hawke premiered his new movie, The Phenom, at the festival. The movie is a sports drama about a talented young baseball pitcher who was sent to a sports psychologist, and memories he has abused as a child come to light.
I was knocked out by the script, and the second I read it, I wanted to be in it. And so I'm happy that we're finally getting to show it to people. This will be a movie that, you never know how movies go over when they first come out. But I have a lot of confidence that this will be a movie that, over time, will find its fans.
Danny DeVito directed the short film Curmudgeons, which held its world premiere in the shorts narrative section of the festival. He also stars in the movie alongside his daughter Lucy, who is a producer, along with his son Jake.
This is concentrated fun. We shot it in 3 days.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we, you know, everybody jumped in.
Viola Davis's movie Custody held its world premiere at Tribeca. She plays a New York judge in the middle of a child custody case. The movie filmed in New York.
You can't recreate New York. It's another character in and of itself. It's another beast in and of itself, you know? And so it literally became another character to be either defeated or embraced.
And TV is also a big draw at Tribeca. Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin attended events to promote the second season of their Netflix comedy, Grace and Frankie. Tom Hiddleston walked the carpet ahead of a panel and screening of his new TV series, The Night Manager. And Juliana Margulies and other Good Wife co-stars attended a farewell event for their long-running CBS drama. I'm Steve Norman in Washington.
Singer Billy Paul, best known for his song Me and Mrs. Jones, died Sunday. He was 80 years old. On Me and Mrs. Jones, a number one song in 1972, Paul crooned about a love affair between a man and a married woman. The sultry song earned Paul a Grammy for Best Male Rhythm and Blues Performance, beating out his competitors who included Ray Charles, Curtis Mayfield, and Isaac Hayes. It was his biggest hit, and Paul would be identified with the song for the rest of his life. Paul was one of the many singers who found success with the writing and producing team of Kenneth Gamble and Leon Huff, whose Philadelphia International Records also released music by the OJs, Teddy Pendergrass, and Harold Melvin, and the Blue Notes. Years later, in 2003, however, Paul sued Gamble and Huff for unpaid royalties on Me and Mrs. Jones.
Me and Mrs. Jones, we got a thing going. Both know that it's wrong, but it's much too strong to let it go now.
Ooh, that's good. We'd like to invite you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at VOA_IE. If you would like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, visit our website. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner and scroll on down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is sending urgently needed humanitarian assistance in response to the crisis in Yemen, the Middle East's poorest and most food-insecure country. Since 1990, when North and South Yemen unified and became the Republic of Yemen, the country has experienced long periods of conflict and civil war, including the 2011 uprising, a part of the Arab Spring. The most recent military conflict there began in March of last year, when the Houthis took over large swaths of territory and forced the elected president, Abed Mansour Hadi, to flee the country. At the request of President Hadi, a Saudi Arabian-led military coalition began airstrikes against Houthi positions. Since then, some 2.8 million Yemenis have been displaced. Over 20 million Yemenis are in need of humanitarian protection and assistance, and at least 6 million are in need of life-saving food assistance. According to the UN Emergency Children's Fund, or UNICEF, as a result of the violence and restrictions on imports, the inflow of food and fuel have been disrupted, hampering the delivery of basic services across Yemen. So, for example, health clinics report severe shortages of supplies, medical equipment, and personnel. As a result, UNICEF estimates that in the past year, nearly 10,000 children under 5 years old may have died of preventable diseases, such as pneumonia or diarrhea, increasing to 50,000 the number of children under five who die every year in Yemen. Indeed, it is the country's children who pay the highest price. Nearly 10 million Yemeni children are now in need of urgent humanitarian assistance. Some 2 million are at risk from diarrheal diseases, and 320,000 are facing severe acute malnutrition. In early April, the United States announced it is providing nearly $139 million of new humanitarian aid to support those affected by the conflict in Yemen and across the region as a result of this conflict. This includes 122,000 metric tons of additional food supplies, as well as emergency health care, nutrition services, shelter, and safe drinking water. The United States has mobilized a robust humanitarian response to the crisis in Yemen, despite the complex and insecure operating environment. We urge our friends and partners around the world to follow our lead and help Yemen in its hour of greatest need.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.